Oh, so my name is Yotaro Arita, from Tokyo, Japan, and actually it's my first experience to see the Pacific Ocean from the east side, and it's quite impressive for me that the weather in Santa Barbara is very nice, comfortable, because when I left Tokyo last week, it was snowing, so now I'm really enjoying my stay in Santa Barbara. I mean, not only physics, but also nice weather, nice comfortable environment of Santa Barbara. So today, I'd like to talk about zeolite. So, what is zeolite? I believe that most of the audience are not so familiar with zeolite. But in this talk, I'd like to propose that zeolite can be a very unique playground of theoretical material design. So, as you know very well, in nature, there are so many interesting strongly correlated electron systems. Transition metal oxides or heavy fermion systems are, of course, representative examples of interesting correlated d electron systems or f electron systems. And for p electron systems, of course, we have a variety of, for example, organic compounds like PET/TTF. And in this talk, I'd like to show you that zeolite is an interesting correlated s electron system. So these are my collaborators of this project. Dr. Yoshiro Nohara is a postdoc in Department of Physics, University of Tokyo, and Kazuma Nakamura is an assistant professor of our group, and Takashi Koretsune is an associate assistant professor in Tokyo Institute of Technology. And these are references in my talk today. So if you are interested in the details of my talk, please look up these papers. So this is an outline of my talk today. So since I believe that zeolite is a less popular material in the community of strongly correlated electron systems, so I would like to start with a brief introduction to this system. So zeolite is a so-called host-guest system, and here host is a framework of nanoporous aluminum silicate, and guest is a cluster of alkali atoms. So we can put a cluster of alkali atoms into the cage of zeolite. And as I will show you later, there are so many crystal structures of the framework of zeolite, and we can think of a variety of clusters. So in total, zeolite is a family of huge members, and it can show a rich variety of physical or chemical properties. And among such a variety of zeolite, some zeolites exhibit an interesting correlation effect. So zeolite can be a strongly correlated electron system made from just aluminum, silicon, and oxygen, and alkali atoms. So usually, these elements are nothing to do with many-body physics. They only play a minor role, but an appropriate combination of these elements, actually we can make an interesting correlated system, and that is zeolite. And one of the most famous examples of interesting correlated zeolite is zeolite LTA. And here, LTA is a name of zeolite, which specifies the structure of zeolite. So as I have mentioned, there are 170 or 80 kinds of crystal structures, and each crystal structures have this kind of code consisting of three letters. And in 1992, Professor Nozue's group in Osaka University discovered that when they put potassium clusters into zeolite LTA, then the system becomes ferromagnet. That means zeolite LTA becomes a ferromagnet comprising only non-magnetic elements, shown here. And up to present, the mechanism of spin polarization has not been understood completely. The mechanism is a mystery of 20 years. And in this talk, I'd like to propose that the origin of magnetism can be described by quite simple multi-orbital Hubbard model. So the argument is following. So here we have a big unit cell of zeolite. Usually, the unit cell of zeolite contains 200 atoms, and the structure is very complicated. But this complicated big object can be seen as some artificial atom, super atom, which we call. And the system, the whole system can be seen as a crystal of super atom. And here the important point is that although the super atom is made from these non-magnetic elements, but the super atom can have a property similar to magnetic element. So as a result, the system can behave like a magnet. And the low energy physics of this system can be described by multi-orbital Hubbard model. So that is our scenario, and we are calling that super atom picture. And if we follow this super atom picture, we can consider a variety of fascinating possibilities of material design in terms of super atom. Especially, we can consider the design of correlation effects in this material. So that is tailor-made correlation in the title. So when we consider such fascinating possibilities, of course we want to know the values of parameters in the effective Hamiltonian. For example, transfer hoppings or interaction parameters such as Hubbard U and so on. And as for the transfer hoppings or other parameters in the one-body part of Hamiltonian, we can roughly estimate them by looking at the band structure of LDA or GGA. But values of interaction parameter is a little bit non-trivial. So the question, how large is U of super atom? So in order to answer this question, we recently performed an ab initio estimate of interaction parameters in zeolite. So in the last part of my talk, I'd like to introduce the results of our recent calculation.
So in this plot, the blue network is one kind of atom and the red atoms is another kind?
This?
Yes. So what is blue and what is red?
I will show you later.
Okay. Yeah.
So let me move on to the introduction to zeolite. What is zeolite? So as I have mentioned, zeolite is the so-called host-gas compound. And the host is a cage of aluminum silicate made from aluminum and oxygen and silicon. And we can put a cluster of alkali atoms into this cage. And so first, let us look into the details of the framework. So starting with corner sharing silicon oxygen 4 or aluminum oxygen 4 tetrahedra, we can make a variety of building block unit. Here I'm showing two examples. And this is the so-called beta cage. And connecting this building unit in a variety of way, actually we can make an various host cage structures. And if we visit the website of the database of zeolite crystal structure, we can find the list of zeolite crystal structures. And here we have 170 or 80 kinds of structures. And this website is very interesting because if we click, for example, the name of structure, then corresponding a picture of corresponding structure appears, and it's impressive how the nature makes so many zeolites. And not only the variety of crystal structure, actually we can change the ratio of aluminum and silicon in the framework. So that means we can control the acidity of the framework, and also we can change the size or number of atoms in the clusters or species of atoms. So in total we have huge degrees of freedom. I mean, zeolite is a family of huge members. And so each zeolite shows a variety of physical and chemical properties. And zeolite is actually used in many applications. Here I'm showing just three examples. The first example is detergent. So zeolite has a high iron exchange, iron exchange capability. So it can be used in the detergent. So I mean, the cations in the host cage is just loosely bounded. So we can easily exchange. So we can use zeolite in detergent. And also, zeolite can be used as molecular sieves, because the zeolite has a regular pore structure, and only a small size of molecule can be absorbed or passed through. But large size molecules cannot pass through, so zeolite can be used in the size exclusion process. And of course, zeolite is well known to work as an efficient catalysis because zeolite has a high surface area and acidity. But in this talk, I'd like to propose that zeolite can also behave as an interesting correlated electron system. So here is the most famous examples of the correlated zeolite LTA. So in 1992, Nozay and others found that when they put a cluster of potassium into the cage, then it becomes a ferromagnet. So here I'm showing the inverse uniform susceptibility as a function of temperature. Here we can see that when we put more than here n means the size or number of atoms in the cage. So when we put more than two potassium atoms in this cage, then we see that, that we have a finite Curie temperature. That means the system becomes ferromagnet at sufficiently low temperature.
Are these metallic?
since this system has many complications, actually, as I will tell you, the position of potassium is it's not so regular, and so it has many randomness, and apparently it behaves as an insulator. So in order, when we consider the mechanism of correlation effects in zeolites, of course we are interested in the electronic structure. So let us see the best features of electronic structures of zeolite. So here I am showing typical examples of electronic structure of zeolite. So this is the LDA band structure, and we can see that the electronic states, we have electronic states from the cage, and it makes a huge gap as large as five or six electron volts. And within this big energy window, we have states from the guest. So guest makes a low energy state, and as far as we are interested in the low energy physics, just around the Fermi level, basically we can forget about states made from the cage. So this situation can be schematically represented by this model, very simple model. So as I have mentioned, the unit cell of zeolite is very huge, and it has a very complicated structure. But we can regard this big cage, each cage can be regarded as a huge atom, big atom. And the system, the whole system can be regarded as a crystal of this super atom. And this cage makes a confining potential, and this corresponds to an atomic potential of super atom. And this alkali guest clusters provide an S electrons into the system, and this S electron corresponds to the valence electrons of the superatom. So the first, the host cage makes a confining potential, and the S or P levels are formed. And if we change the number of alkali clusters into the cage, then the number of valence electrons changes. So that corresponds to, that means we can change the species of superatoms.
Can you say, I'm sorry, can you say why the bandwidths are as big as they are? I mean, you know, your band structure had a bandwidth of a volt or something, it looked like. I just look at from the, you know, the energy the maximum energy splitting of the, you know, goes from zero to minus one.
Your question is bandwidth is smaller than this.
No. That's clear. I'm surprised that it's as big as it is. You see a bandwidth of approximately 1 volt if I compare the gamma point to the M point, and yet your picture is of very big entities with a small atom inside. Do we know how the electrons can go so easily from one site to the next? Are there specific paths that might get messed up by disorder, for example? Is there some way to intuitively understand the?
You mean the transfer between this and this?
Yes.
The size of one function is very huge, and just touching the border of the cage, and the transfer can be an order of few hundred electron volts.
I see. And
but it depends on the size of windows here.
Mm-hmm. So why is the Vanier function so big? I mean, so that means the electron on the alkali cluster are much more delocalized than they would be for the alkali cluster.
So Vanier function has an amplitude of all atoms in the cluster. It doesn't localize on some specific atoms. It is delocalized in the cage. I will show you.
That alkali is very big atom.
Sorry?
Alkali is big atom.
So somehow the alkali cluster fills up the whole inside, yes. The entire inside.
Oh, yeah,
the cage.
Basically.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
So I will show you the Wanin function later, but the tail of Wanin function touches the framework. So by changing the number of alkali cluster atoms, we can change the number of valence electrons. And as I have mentioned, there are so many crystal structures in zeolite, so we can change the crystal structure of supercrystal. So
how many atoms you can fit into that hole? Is it 1, 2, 3, 4 atoms?
Yeah, this is just a schematic picture. In case of zeolite LTA, it is about 16 or something.
16?
Yeah.
But in experiment, you showed just a few.
Sorry?
In experiment, you showed just a few atoms, right?
No, no.
Up to 8, okay.
Yeah. And, okay. So now it is interesting to consider whether the correlation effects in zeolite can be explained in terms of superatom picture, or we can consider the possibility of material design in terms of superatom.
But why then you just have very few bands crossing the kernel level?
Basically, two. This is an example. This is an example, and this is the simplest example. Which I will show you later, but this is a single orbital system because we have four sodium atoms, but three are absorbed in the cage. The only one electron remains in the inside the cage. So here it is interesting to compare the electronic structure of zeolites and the solid fluorine. Solid fluorine is also an interesting system in that sometimes it shows a correlation effect. So it can be a ferromagnet. So if we make C60 TDA, TDA is the names of molecules here, it becomes a ferromagnet at sufficiently low temperatures. But if we look at the electronic structure of solid fluorine, here the home states reside on the fluorine. So in case of zeolite, the states around the film level reside inside the cage. But in case of fluorine, the low energy states is living on the cage. That is a big difference between fluorine and zeolite system. Okay, so this is an introduction to zeolite, and let us move on to the study on the ferromagnetism, potassium-loaded zeolite LTA.
So from the electronic structure point of view, then the difference is that the buckyballs have a bigger bandwidth?
The bandwidth? It's similar, but it depends. So zeolite has many possibilities. So in case of sodalite, it's about one electron volt. But in case of LTA, the bandwidth becomes much smaller.
But you show this pure C60 structure. Yes, pure C60 is just cage.
Yeah.
You need to compare, for example, this potassium C60. And you see the valence structure.
Yeah. So this is a result of Nozue's group in 1992. So as I've shown you, this is the inverse uniform susceptibility as a function of temperature. And this is a plot of Curie and Weiss temperatures as a function of the size of cluster n. So in order to keep the charge neutrality of the system, we need 12 potential atoms. And then they introduce additional potassium into the system, and then they found the system becomes ferromagnet. And we can see that the energy scale of magnetism becomes highest for n equals 3 or 4. And in order to understand these behaviors, Nozue proposed the following scenario without looking at the electronic structure of LDA calculation, because at that time there is no LDA calculation. So they proposed that the first, the cage of aluminum silicate makes a confining potential, and in this potential we have S levels and P levels. And when the number of N is small, basically the system is S electron system, so the system is not magnetic. But when we put more than two alkali atoms, then the number of valence electron becomes larger than two, and they fuse a Funt coupling. The system becomes P electron systems, and for degenerate P systems we have Funt coupling, and then the system becomes magnetic. That is their scenario. But this scenario has not been examined theoretically because we have several problems, mainly two problems. One problem is that position of potassium is not clear, was not clear. Position of aluminum and silicon and oxygen, this is quite easy to determine, but the position of potassium inside the cage, it is not so clear. But about 10 years after the discovery of Nozue's group, Dr. Ikeda and his collaborators performed a detailed neutron scattering measurement, and they determined the precise position of potassium. And another problem, the other problem is, this is a problem for theory. The unit cell of zeolite LTA is quite huge, so it contains about 200 atoms in a unit cell. And actually, 5 years ago, I performed an LDA calculation, but there I changed the arrangement of aluminum and silicon and made an artificial small simplified unit cell. At that time, we couldn't study the magnetism in this system, just LDA. But recently, the performance of a supercomputer improved, so we revisit this problem and we perform LSDA calculation and examine whether LSDA give a ferromagnetic ground state. So let me look into the details of the crystal structure of zeolite LTA. So this is the unit cell of zeolite LTA. So zeolite LTA has two kinds of cages. One is called alpha cage, whose diameter is about 12 angstrom. And another one is, beta cage, whose size is a little bit smaller than alpha cage, 8 angstrom. And in a unit cell, we have two alpha cage and two beta cages. So let us call them as alpha 1, alpha 2, and beta 1, and beta 2. And the position of aluminum, silicon, and oxygen is very clear, but position of potassium was difficult to determine. But Ikeda's group performed a neutron scattering measurement, and they found that there are four kinds of sites for potassium. The site 1, so let us call them site 1, site 2, site 3, site 4. And site 1 is a center of hexagon, and site 2 is the center of octagon, and site 3 is the center of square, and site 4 is the center of the alpha cage cell. This one. And they also determine the occupations of these sites. And they found that site 1 and site 2 are almost fully filled. But the problem is site 3. Site 3 has 12 positions, but they are partially filled. So a number of possible configuration is 12 choose 6 times 12 choose 3. So this number is quite huge. And it is almost impossible to calculate, perform LSDA calculation for all these configurations. But we found that if we assume that the system has a trigonal symmetry, then it is okay to study the following four types of geometries. So we call geometry 1, 2, 3, 4, and perform the LSDA calculation for these configurations, and calculate the total energy and magnetic moment of alpha cages. And interestingly, we found that the geometry 1, the most stable one, has a finite magnetic moment. And so we can say that LSDA gives finite magnetic moment and from the combination of non-magnetic elements. And then next let us look at the wave function of the system. So geometry 1 and 2, for example. So unfortunately, the band structure is quite different for geometry 1 and 2. But if we look at the wave function, the character, the Bloch wave function at the gamma point is very similar. I mean, both are designed inside the cage, and it has only one node. That means these are superatom P states, and superatom P states are responsible for magnetism. And also we can understand why geometry 1 has a big moment by this picture, because so in a geometry 1, the alpha 1 cage, the homo level is degenerated, so we have a polarized spin here. But on the other hand, in geometry 2, the second geometry, the homo is not degenerated, and we have four electrons in this px and py. So the system has small magnetic moment. So this, so that the behaviors can be understood in terms of the superatom picture. So more recently, we examined whether the behaviors of LSDA can be described by a simple multi-orbital Hubbard model. So for this purpose, first we performed an LDA calculation, not the LSDA, and extract a P orbital states on the Fermi level, and makes a maximally localized Wannier function, and construct an effective low energy tight binding model. So this is the dispersion of the tight binding model, and we can see that the tight binding model is reproducing the original LDA band quite well here. Yeah. And then we introduce Hubbard U and front coupling J, and perform a Hartree-Fock calculation, and compared with the dispersion of LSDA. And we can see that the model calculation is producing the LSDA calculation quite well. So this results also suggest that multi-orbital Hubbard model for superatom p states can describe the magnetism quite successfully.
Excuse me, may I just make sure that I have your physical picture right? You say that magnetism and, let's say, other interesting electronic properties come from a small number of electron states which are localized basically inside the cage.
Yes.
And that in some approximation, all the other alkali atoms which are stuck on the walls of the cage, I can forget about, except that they provide some kind of frame in which these electrons live.
Yes. Spin polarization comes from P states. And so this level is actually S state. And we can see that it is not polarized.
Yes, but I think there's, I wanted to be sure I understood correctly, there's two different things. One is that I can have both S and P states of the, let's say, electron density inside the cage. And the second thing is that I can consider the electrons associated with all the alkali atoms which you showed in positions 1 and 2 stuck on the outside of the cage, or on the wall of the cage.
Yes, yes.
So you were saying that only the electrons inside the cage are have a chance of being active in low energy properties.
Magnetically active,
Or presumably, therefore, also conducting or...
Yes.
So, sorry, but do the S states play a role or not? The S states of the alkali atom?
The role is this.
No, there's... I see. Okay, the S states of the super atom, Do they play any role or not?
Play a role?
A role, yes.
What kind?
Green
S
state
of the superatom.
Superatom. So it has an amplitude.
I think his question is, are there compounds where the S states cross the Fermi level and control the properties, whatever those properties are?
Yeah, when the number of potassium atoms is small, then S level comes to the Fermi level.
But this example, how many potassium is active potassium atom?
The number of potassium atom is 4. But when the potassium number of potassium atom is 1, then the system becomes S electron system.
It will also be magnetic.
And lost magnetic, yeah.
How many green bands you have? So you have one S band of superatom?
No, the unit cell has two superatoms, two alpha cages.
Okay.
So we have we performed a mean field calculation for larger U and examined how the magnetism of the system changes. And for small weak coupling regime, we got the same result as LCDA. So alpha 2 cage has a big moment. But when we increase the values of induction parameter U, then some of spins in alpha 2 moves to alpha 1 to avoid interorbital Coulomb interaction, and the system become so antiferromagnetic correlation appears. But this tendency is consistent with experiments because the white field is always negative. So the each local spin must feel the mean field of antiferromagnetic mean field. So in that sense, this configuration is more consistent with experiment. And so now the question is, how large is U? So it is important to understand the correlation effects in Zellweger. We need to estimate of the value of U quite accurately.
So alpha 1 and alpha 2 are the different cages, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, equivalent case in the unit cell.
So does it depend where the potassium atom sits?
Yes.
Can the electron move freely from one cage to the other and choose? Or should that information be contained in the model?
You mean the density of electrons should be determined self-consistently?
Is it influenced by the fact that the potassium is in one cage and not the other? Or there are more potassiums in alpha 2 than in alpha 1?
Although in the LSD calculation we have 4 electrons, but we have now, if we look at the number of potassium in this model, it's more natural to assume that alpha 1 has 1 electron and alpha 2 has 3 electrons.
Okay.
So this is the problem when we consider the correlation effect in Dioride. So how large is U? And this question is quite general when we consider the many body physics in Dioride. So we decided to study this problem for much simpler Dioride, because Dioride LTA is, as I have shown you, it is basically the multi-orbital system and has many complications. So in order to discuss how large is U of superatom, we decided to study a much simpler case. So we decided to choose sodalite as the target material in this study. And the sodalite is the most simple dioride whose unit cell is smallest. So beta cage is the smallest building block in the dioride, and sodalite is made only from beta cage. And in the unit cell, it has only 46 atoms. And as I will show you later in detail, the system has, the cage only has one local spin, so we can regard this system as a hydrogen atom of superatom. And so we decided to estimate of U of one state of superatom. Okay, so.
Sorry, what is inside this cage? What real atom? Or there is nothing?
Inside the cage?
Where does one electron escape from?
We can put 4 alkali atoms in the beta cage.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Okay. So let us move on to the last part of my talk. So before going to the details of Dioride SOD, let me briefly explain how we estimate the Hubbard U of superatom. So we use the constrained RPA method. So as for the constrained RPA method, I think Takashi Miyake already gave a talk in the first week of this workshop, so I will skip the detail, but the basic idea is following. So let us consider the effective interactions around the Fermi level, effective interaction between electronic states around the Fermi level. So in order to discuss this problem, we first introduce an energy window, and that is called electronic state within this energy window as target electrons, and called the states below that this window as occupied electrons, occupied states, and states above the energy window as virtual states. And when we evaluate the screened Coulomb interactions between target electrons, of course we have to consider the screening effect by occupied electrons and virtual electrons. But what we have to care is that we have to exclude the screening effect by target electron itself, because the screening effect by target electrons should be considered when we solve the effective model. So when we estimate the value of Hubbard U, we should not introduce include the screening effect by target electrons. And within the random phase approximation, we can exclude this screening process quite easily.
Why is Ten-Benz here in Tajin? If you said it.
Sorry?
Why is it Ten-Benz in Tajin region?
This is a bound structure of iron nickel. It's not.
It's not.
Not the theory. Sorry.
Okay, fine.
And I'm using the same problem, but. And within the random phase approximation, we can exclude the screening effect of target electrons, because in RPA, the polarization function is a sum of screening processes between between occupied target, target virtual, or occupied virtual between target electrons. And if we skip to add these sums, then we can estimate the effective interaction between target electrons. So calculating this quantity here, W is a Wannier function, we can estimate about U or other interaction parameters in the effective model. So we perform this method for zeolite, SOD, sodalite, which we call. And so, as I mentioned, sodalite is the simplest zeolite, which has the smallest unit cell. And we can put four alkali atoms in the cage. And three electrons are absorbed in the framework, and only one electron remains inside the cage. And so, in terms of the superatom picture, the system can be regarded as a BCC lattice of beta cage. And experimentally, Nozue's group recently measured an uniform susceptibility of sodalite for various alkali metal clusters. And from the slope of this inverse susceptibility, we can say that 99% of beta cage has spin half spins, localized spins, and they found that white temperature is about few hundred Kelvin, while the nil temperature is about less than 100 Kelvin. So the ratio of white temperature and nil temperature is smaller than unity. So this suggests that the system has some fluctuation, and the system can be mapped to the so-called J1, J2 Heisenberg model on BCC lattice. And for J1, J2 Heisenberg model, so we can calculate the temperature dependence of susceptibility by means of a high temperature expansion method. So here we calculate the spin-spin correlations, and we do a power series expansion around beta equals zero. And we can calculate susceptibility quite accurately. because this is a computer-aided analytical method, and we can calculate the quantities in the thermodynamic limit, and it doesn't matter whether the system has frustration or not. And we determine the number of coefficients, and we fit the experimental data by theoretical calculation. And we estimated that the value of exchange coupling is about 48 Kelvin and, well, 20 Kelvin in the case of potassium sodalite. And the case of sodium sodalite, it's about 26 and 8 Kelvin. So now it is interesting to see whether we can reproduce these values from the constrained RPA calculation. So these values are quite small. And the basic strategy is following. So we first do LDA calculation and make a maximally localized Wannier function. And then we construct an extended Hubbard model. In this case, it is single orbital. Apparently, it can. We have two bands, but this is because we have two beta cage in the cell. So the system is basically single orbital Hubbard model. And then we can derive an Heisenberg Hubbard model. Now we will see that the value of Hubbard U is larger than bandwidth, so we can safely apply the second order perturbation theory, and we can derive a Heisenberg model from this extended Hubbard model. So this is a maximally localized Wannier function of sodalite. And we can see that main amplitude exists inside the cage, and just touching the framework, but the transfer is about a few 57 millielectron volt or 32 millielectron volt. And if in the case of potassium, the size of Wannier function becomes larger, and the bandwidth becomes a little bit larger. So the exchange coupling becomes larger. And this is a result of constrained RPA. And we see that the Baer-Coulomb interaction, so this this doesn't include the screening effect. But if we include the screening effect by occupied or virtual states, then the value of Hubbard U becomes smaller. It's about 3 electron volts. But if we doesn't introduce the constraint and include all the screening effect, then the screening effect, the screen U becomes very, very small. So this is the table of correlation parameters in the effective Hamiltonian. So the Baer-Coulomb is about 6 electron volt, but if we do constrained RPA, then the value becomes half, and the usual RPA gives 0.1 electron volt or something. And we also have a direct exchange coupling, so it should be noted that unit is Kelvin here. It's very small, but still it has 57 Kelvin or something. And here the super exchange coupling can be estimated by this equation, and it's about 20 Kelvin or something. And it should be noted that if we do not introduce the screening effect, the exchange coupling is smaller than direct exchange. So the system.
Can you comment why? So super exchange is anti-ferromagnetic, which is positive in your case. Why direct?
This is anti-ferromagnetic. Sorry.
Why direct interaction is also anti-ferromagnetic?
Zero.
I'm sorry, just sign. Yes, sign of J1 and J2. J1 and J2 are interactions which are within the same cage, right? Or are they between?
No. These are
between. Direct interaction between, but it's direct interaction, not super exchange.
So
normally, I guess it's ferromagnetic, while super exchange is anti-ferromagnetic.
Yeah, so these are anti-ferromagnetic, so sign is minus.
Oh, okay.
No, positive sign is your anti-ferromagnetic.
No, I forget to put minus here.
Okay. Fine.
I'm sorry, and V1 and V2 are nearest neighbor Coulomb interaction?
Nearest neighbor and next nearest neighbor. And nearest neighbor, next nearest neighbor, exchange coupling. So the net exchange coupling should be calculated by this equation, K minus J. And so when we do not consider the screening effect, then J minus K becomes positive. So the system becomes ferromagnetic, but in a random phase approximation, the K is very big, so the
exchange U is very small. Because U is almost zero.
Yeah, because U almost all zero. So
but you're not allowed to put it in Anderson super exchange formula if U is small. It's useless to put it in T2 over U.
Yeah. In that case, perturbation theory doesn't work well.
Okay.
Yeah, this is just a reference.
Yeah.
And so only when we introduce, we consider the screening effect by constant RPA, we got an order of 10 Kelvin of anti-ferromagnetic screen interaction. Of course, the agreement between experiment and constant RPA is not perfect yet, but this will be the first step to do an ab initio estimate of correlation parameters in theory. So, okay, so let me summarize my talk. So first, in the first part, I introduced a study on ferromagnetism in theory LTA, and we have shown that the magnetism in this system is expected to be described by a superatom picture. And in the second part, I introduced a result of ab initio derivation of low energy model. And we performed an estimate of interaction parameters by constant LPA. And the agreement between theory and experiment is not perfect yet, but we believe that this is the first step to an interesting tailor-made correlation in this system. And as for future problems, recently, Nozze's group again performed the measurement of internal field distribution by muon SR. And they proposed that the spin configuration of theorite LTA is candid. So candid due to the Jarosinski-Moria interaction. So this means that there is a substantial LS coupling, spin optic coupling. So this means although the superatom itself is made from light element, but the superatom can behave as a heavy element. And the relativistic effect can be visible. And in this sense, the estimate of spin orbit coupling in this system is also interesting. Okay, so I will stop here and thank you very much for your attention.
Vibrations? So what about the vibrational dynamics of these alkali atoms?
Ah, vibration.
Important.
I have not yet studied, but one of the reasons why we overestimate the value of U is that if we put electrons to the cluster, then the size of the cluster should expand. But this process is not taken into account in the constant PA. So that we believe that that is the one reason why we overestimate the value of U.
How fast is that?
Frequency.
Yes. Experimental. Yeah. Unfortunately, we have not yet estimated. But you said that this is P electron system. Did you estimate from your constraint that P is a full P U matrix?
Up to now, we have yet performed constant RPA calculation only for the SOD single orbital system. But of course, if we do calculation for LTA, we have a matrix of dimension parameters.
Have you studied how your Bunyan functions? So it looks like they are just in the cavity, right? How sensitive they are to the position of the alkalis?
How sensitive to
Because in the very beginning you were saying there's quite some disorder in the
You mean that in the case of LTA. So in the case of soda the position is fixed. In the case of LTA, the Bunyan function, the shape of Bunyan function doesn't depend on, we believe that it doesn't depend on the precise position of potassium, because the shape of one function is similar to alpha 1 and alpha 2, and the configuration of potassium in alpha 1 and alpha 2 is quite different. So the shape of one function doesn't so depend on the position of potassium.
So it more depends on the volume that you have.
Volume?
Yeah.
Volume of
the cavity.
Yeah, that's
the. So if you would put more and more alkali atoms in this cage, can you make a transition to these high pressure phases of alkali atoms? Here's some local arrangement that comes close to these high pressure phases. So what is the nearest neighbor distance of the alkali atoms in this cage structure, if you put more and more?
You put pressure and make the hole size smaller and smaller.
Well, that is this normal high pressure phases. I would think if you could also mimic this kind of high pressure scenario in such a case, in such a cage.
I don't know any experimental data which change the electronic structure drastically by applying pressure. I don't know.
So what is actually the reason for having different sites for the alkali atoms? Is it this ionic diffusion that we have in zeolites that more or less the neutron experiment just sees the atoms, some atoms in saddle points and some in local minima?
Hi. You're saying that why there are so many...
Yeah, is this due to confusion
with
the alkali
atoms? I think so. So there are many... So they can only determine the occupancy. Mm-hmm. And potassium doesn't sit on specific site.
Yeah, they diffuse with each other.
Of course, so probably lithium can freely diffuse.
Yeah.
Can you say
why the full RPA results are so much different from the constrained RPA results and what that means
that
for...
Because the density of states on the film level is very high.
Right, but does that have any physical consequences? I mean, it seems quite amazing somehow that, you know, really you could, because all this stuff of density of states around the Fermi level really is, you know,
yeah, but in constrained RPA, the screening effect around the Fermi level is completely...
No. My question is, what is the physics of this screening around the Fermi level? How can this high density of states screen so much, and does it signal some kind of interesting physical property of the system? Okay, never mind. Let's discuss it later. I'm sorry.
Yeah, there you have metallic screening, right? While if you don't include this, then you get something like screening in insulator. So if you look at the green curve, this is like as if you had an epsilon.
So it
looks like it's still turning up at low frequencies.
So that's...
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, but the point is that all the other atoms that are doing this screening in the conduction band are in different holes. So how can they screen two guys which are on the same site in the same hole of the zeolite? That's what's bothering me. I clearly understand metallic screening if I look at length scales, which is larger than one cage-cage distance, mm-hmm. or of the order. But here we're talking about an interaction of two guys on the same cage. That's the part I don't understand, how it can get screened so much.
So you're assuming that this point can be small, but this should be...
But yeah, there I'm wondering, is the calculation really as accurate? Because if you look at the bare, if you go at large distances where the distance is larger than the extent of your one wave function, really the points should look should lie on the 1 over r. So I wonder, can that be that you have a very crude paper or something, or that you scatter around this curve?
The scattering?
Yes.
Yeah, the key point cannot be...
Yeah. So I think because the system is so large, so I wouldn't trust too much these also for the full curve, these very small changes.
But we're interested. But I think my question is really that what's the meaning of extrapolating this down below r equals 7 angstroms, mm-hmm. or whatever it is.
But again, how many potassium atoms in cage for this calculation? Hmm? How many alkali atoms? How many alkali atoms is in cage, inside cage?
Inside cage, four.
Four, it's four. They screen each other.
Even though there's only one band at the Fermi surface.
It's just in real space, it's physically. You put one additional electron, then...
basically, three electrons are leaving.
Yeah. Three electrons are living far away. All that effect is just coming from the blue band, as far as I understand.
But this band does not correspond to this calculation, as I understand.
All right, well, then we should discuss this.
These two bands are coming from the two different cages instead, so this is like... What is that? These two bands are coming from two different cages.
Two different cages.
So that's four. Okay, so let's stop here.